Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Not everyone on Twitter is who they say they are. Like at Mayor Emanuel, a Twitter imposter who pretended to be former White House Chief of Staff and Chicago mayoral candidate Rahm Emanuel. These fake tweets became incredibly popular in Chicago. Fake Rahm had more followers than the real Rahm Emanuel. And the Atlantic Monthly even praised this bogus Twitter feed for elevating the tweet and the F word to the level of literature. Well, let's listen to some of this thumb poetry. Throwing that chair through the window wasn't the best f***ing decision in the world just now. Now we're f***ed and it's cold. Is so f***ing mother f***ing that I keep f***ing forgetting to f***ing swear. Yes. Based on this literature, I look forward to CeeLo Green's Pulitzer. Well, after months of media speculation, the fake Rahm Emanuel has been unmasked. His real identity is Dan Sinker, a journalism professor at Chicago's Columbia College. Now, in case you're not familiar, journalism is an old-fashioned occupation like bootblacking or alchemy. After the break, this fake Rahm Emanuel will be my guest. I hope. I better not have booked the real Rahm Emanuel, because that guy is a pain in the balls.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's 100% green, and we had to special order his concealer. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Wakey, 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 wakey.
I don't want to go to school.
Oh, you're late. Whoever you are out there, it's an hour later than you think it is. I love doing this to people on daylight saving time. And by the way, it's not daylight savings time. It's daylight saving time, okay? Although we don't seem to be saving any time, really.
Yeah, we're losing time.
It's bogus. It's just somebody's making cash off of this.
It's not for the farmers?
Oh, the poor... No!
I thought we did everything on the show for the farmers.
No! I mean, if you look at it, when do you save the light? In the evening. You have more light in the evening, not the morning. So the farmer gets to go out. You know, yesterday the farmer went out in the fields and it was daylight. Today, same time, it's dark.
Okay.
So how's that helping the farmer?
I'm with you. I'm with you on this.
Gee, I'm already worked up. You know, it's like, we're 30 seconds into this thing. And, you know, maybe it's because of the whole Twitter thing last week, which you missed, of course, because you weren't even here,
Mm-mm.
Heather Fry.
I was not here.
But Mark Munger was.
Yes.
I was here.
Thank you.
And Mark bore the brunt of it.
I did. It was tough. It was a dirty subject.
He was crying.
I was.
I was sobbing.
Were you talking about composting again? Dirty subjects?
No, we're talking about dog poo. Did you see the headline on my... I got to pull that up, too. The headline. If you go to MikeNovak.net...
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about feces.
I didn't say it. I just said dog
poo. Drops. I see that Twitter explodes.
Poo drops. Twitter explodes. Bam. That's the headline. For Sunday morning. Good morning, everybody going to church. All right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my fault,
on the Mike
you guys.
Novak show.
You know, I can't help it. I'm on Sunday. I ask for Saturday. All right, believe me. I said no Saturday. Really, that would work a lot better because you want to be a little raunchier on a Saturday morning. But no, they gave me Sunday. But they're stuck with me. You folks, you know, Sunday
push
morning.
The envelope.
That we do. That's what we do best. So, Twitter. That's why I had to do the Twitter reference at the top of the show from the Colbert Report. And but also, we have a student of fake ROM sitting right here, Mark Munger. Tell me about this. Was your professor over at Columbia?
I had him for a class, for a documentary class.
All right, so
He was great. He's you know, he's really smart. He's
obviously, I mean, he's going to make a gazillion dollars. Women are going to be throwing themselves at him. He's going to get, you know, he's already been on Colbert Report.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, he's been creative.
I hate him for that. I hate successful people.
I know. It makes you so jealous.
It does.
You get successful by tweeting.
By tweeting, of all things. Him and Charlie Sheen!
Charlie Sheen is a train wreck. I mean,
yeah, but he's got.
That's like watching the Titanic sink and you're in the lifeboat going, oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah, but some people are not in the lifeboat.
Like John Cryer, poor ducky.
Oh, yeah, it's true. He's a, yeah.
And with John Hughes gone, whatever will he do?
So, so tell me about the prof.
The prof? Oh, he was, you know, he was a great prof.
What's his name again? I'm sorry, I've forgotten already.
His name is Dan Sinker.
I mean, Dan Sinker. Love you, Dan.
Yeah.
Let's go have a beer.
You know, he's been very innovative. Like, his whole life, he's just one of those people that's always been making new things. He was the one that started Punk Planet, and he started that when he was in college. You know, and that was around for years, and it was one of the
I don't even know what that is.
It was a magazine that followed punk culture that was,
really?
Know, it was very innovative, and it was
holy smokes.
It was very popular, and you know, a lot of people look back on it as being one of the, you know, leaders in subculture magazines.
So any of this rub off on you?
Not at all. You know, I slept through the class. There was an hour time change. I just kept missing
it. It was early.
Yes.
They want you to come in and be creative and funny early
actually,
in the day.
The class actually would fit this show very well. It was all about local foods. Like, we were making documentaries about the local food movement.
You serious?
Yeah. Yeah, so.
So he's going to take my job any day now, basically.
He could take your job right now.
He could snap his fingers
actually,
and
I called
waltz
him
in here.
This morning, I said, you know, now that you've been on Colbert, you should take the Mike Novak show.
You know.
That's the next step.
Down.
Well, it's still a step.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter which direction you're going, as long
careful
as you're going
what you
somewhere.
Wish for, right?
That's, yeah. That's,
I want to keep moving. Which direction?
That's my philosophy. That's what I tell my wife. Well, it was a step.
Well, and that's what. And I found out earlier. I said to Mark, "Does you know you just started working with the show? We're happy to have you here. Has your wife been listening to you on the radio? Nah, she's sleeping in.
Yeah,
my family doesn't really listen either. They're all asleep,
and they're better off for it.
As long as that means I get a nap later.
I should force her to wake up and listen.
I think what you should do before you leave is set the alarm clock. And then move it into another room so she has to get out of bed to answer it right at 9 o'clock so that she has to listen to the show.
Did you ever do that to Kathleen?
You think I'm crazy?
Exactly. What, I was going to say it.
You think I don't value my own life?
Exactly. So what are you doing to poor Mark here? He's a young married man. I mean, come on. We want a few years out of him. Yeah. Don't send him off to his grave now.
No, this is what you call a learning experience, all right? I'm trying to.
Don't do it, Mark. Don't do it.
All right.
So there's podcasts for a reason.
Yeah, so people can ignore those too. Yeah. All right. By the way, yes, you could, if you didn't get to hear this scintillating conversation live, go to my podcast at mikenowak.net, mikenowak.net. Of course, right now we're streaming live and you can get the link there. You know, if you're getting a fuzzy radio signal, hey, go to the stream and catch it online. And you can always write me, mike@mikenowak.net. I actually sit here and try to answer some of those emails on the air as they come in. Don't see everything all the time, but I do the best I can. And we've got Twitter. We've got Facebook. I don't know if any of the Twitter followers are listening anymore, but if they are, I hope they still continue to tweet.
You did set Twitter ablaze, eh?
Yeah, it was cool. But I'm not viral. I mean, I don't have a million followers overnight. You know, it was funny because your professor was talking about
Emanuel.
that's next. Except it's already been done. So I have to pretend I'm Charlie Sheen.
Oh dear.
Oh boy.
No, I don't have the energy to do that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, you just look into the guy's eyes and
his eyes look like he's 150.
Yeah, but he's ancient and wise. Oh, well. All right. Anyway, on the show today, we start with student career days. We got to get future horticulturists of America from someplace. And at Joliet Junior College, in fact, let's get Roger on the line there, Heather. And at Joliet Junior College, coming this Thursday through Sunday is Student Career Days, and it's sponsored by the Professional Land Care Network. They're the ones that put this on. The acronym is PLANET. And we'll talk to one of the students there. Kathy Mano is in studio here. Roger Phelps will be here shortly. Rick DeMaio Weather at the bottom of the hour. Second hour, Jim Slama, the founder and president of FamilyFarmed.org. Another big doing this week, the Family Farmed Expo, starts again on Thursday. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the UIC Forum. And Jim Slama will be talking about Family Farmed. You can't believe how much stuff goes on at Family Farmed Expo. And then Bob Martin also is going to be speaking there. And I'm glad to have him on to talk about a subject that I haven't hit on yet. There are so many environmental issues. Bob Martin is with the Pew Environmental Group, and he was with the Pew Commission on Industrial Farm Animal Production. And basically, it's about antibiotics. I'm going to talk to him about why are we putting antibiotics in healthy animals and what's it going to do to us. That's also in the 10 o'clock hour. And in the good growing segment, we all tie it in very, very nicely. By talking to Martha Boyd, who's been on the show many times with Angelic Organics Learning Center. And, it's about, again, Family Farmed. It's, one of the things that's going to happen at the Family Farmed on Friday is that a bunch of people are going to get together and talk about the future of food in Chicago. They, call it the Food Policy Summit. And not just in Chicago, but in the region as well. And one of the things that's happening is the city of Chicago is talking about food and farming in the city. And there are ordinances and hurdles to get over and to negotiate. And that's one of the things that Martha and I will be talking about in the Good Growing segment. All on the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And at the moment, I want to welcome into the studio. Are we having trouble reaching?
I'm having trouble with phone number. They're telling me it's the wrong number.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. Hold on. All right, I got all kinds of email here. I thought that was it. All right, but I'll tell you what. Before I do that, let's talk to Kathy Mano, who's and thank goodness you're here, Kathy. Pull that microphone over to you. And Kathy is a student at Joliet Junior College. How long have you been doing that?
Off and on. Well, I started in 2004, left in 2006, and came back 2009.
All right. It sounds like we got a story there.
Yeah, I went to school and then started a business that was completely unrelated to horticulture and discovered I hated it and wanted to go back to doing what I love.
Really? So you hated it, and what was it that you hated?
A moving company.
So moving company's not as good as horticulture?
Absolutely not.
And then what prompted you to come back and study horticulture of all things? Did you have an interest in it before?
Yeah, I've lived in a lot of places, kind of got the bug from my dad. German neighbors, when I lived in Germany, did a lot of gardening with them. It's pretty big in Europe to garden your own vegetables.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk about that all the time. You know, it's one of the – that's why we got a thing like FamilyFarmed.org and the Advocates for Urban Agriculture all the time. So are you in terms of landscape – but in terms of landscaping, it's more than just vegetables. It's a whole range of things, right?
Oh, yes.
All right. Tell me some of the things that – by the way, have you been to student career days before?
Yeah, I went last year to the competition in Atlanta.
All right, tell me about how that was. And I'm going to ask you to pull the mic even closer a little bit. They're not as sensitive as you think they are.
That was a really, really fun experience. There was about 1,000 students from across the country, plus Canada and England. We had competitors. And it was just great energy. Everybody's, you know, like-minded, competing for the nerdiest plant accolades they could possibly get.
Well, why? What do you mean? What kind of nerdy things?
I don't know. You get into it, and it's kind of nerdy. You're learning a lot of Latin names, and that's not typical for most people. But I like it. Everybody else there seemed to like it.
Well, but that's part of the deal, right? If you're going to be a landscaper, you got to know the Latin names.
Absolutely.
All right. Are we, hold on. Are you tracking them down? What I would say, Heather, I try different variations of that number. Okay. I mean, I'm looking at the email right here. We're just having problems with this every week. This is not good. Try that number, and I'm seeing that's the number I've got there. That 757 number?
Yes.
All right. I would say, you know, the last four digits, flip them around. Try something. And they say it's the wrong number? Okay. Tell you what, I'm going to take a break. I'll take a break right here and get some business done because I want to get Roger Phelps on the show. I don't even know where he is. He might be. Here's what I'm going to have you do. Here's what I'm going to have you call. Call this number here. Wait a second. Let's do this. We'll be right back.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Maybe you can't see them yet, but they're there. Bum bum. Insect eggs on your outdoor trees and shrubs. Yep, left behind by the little buggers last year, and they're getting ready to hatch. What can you do? Get cracking with Bonide's all-season spray oil, which will take care of those fledgling mites, scale, aphids, galls, mealybugs, and more. And I'm very happy to have the great people at Bonide back on the show this year, especially Bonide's Garden Naturals line. And one of the line products is all-season spray oil. It's recommended for vegetables, fruit trees, shade trees, shrubs, ornamentals, and roses. The green-friendly concoction comes in quart ready to use, quart ready to spray with a built-in hose and attachment for easy application, and a concentrate for those of you who prefer to mix your own. This is the year you're going to go green, right? Try all-season spray oil. You can find it at these local retailers, Gethsemane Garden Center in Chicago, Heinz Brothers Greenhouse in St. Charles, Illinois, Chalet Landscape in Wilmette, Illinois, or go to Bonide.com to find a retailer near you, or for a complete product listing of Bonide's Garden Naturals line. And Kathy Mano from Joliet Junior College, I bet that's one of the things you learn when you're doing the landscaping is how to use a horticultural oil.
Not yet.
Not yet. Oh, so I'm ahead of you. You will. You will. It'll happen. Okay. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Believe it or not, spring will be here next week. So, and yes, I said next week, next Sunday, actually. So what should you be doing for your trees now? Well, now, before they leaf out, take a good look at your trees. Are there hanging branches, split bark, or other obvious signs of damage? Is there frost and freeze damage from this winter? Or are three dead branches, there might be five dead branches that you've known about for years that you finally want removed. Also check the mulch around the base of your trees. Does it look a little thin? Do you want to expand it this year and take out a little more lawn? Always a good idea for your tree. And remember, please don't pile the mulch up on the bark of the tree because you're killing your tree. Now, whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-2220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
find that you're alone. Cause I'll be gone.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're talking about student career days at Joliet Junior College, March 17th to 20th, and it's pretty clear that we're not going to get Roger Phelps on, which is a shame because he's a member of the Planet Board of Directors. And Planet, of course, is the professional land care network and the people that put on student career days. But that's okay. Whatever. We got Kathy Mano, who's actually going to be on site. And one of the things, if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, and this week's show, I put a list of the kinds of things that the students compete in. It's pretty comprehensive. Things like 3D exterior landscape, annual and perennial identification, arboriculture techniques, business management, compact excavator operation. Are you into any of these heavy machinery types of things?
No, not yet. Maybe one day.
So what do you like?
I'm a plant nerd, so I'm into all the plants.
All right. So when you say you're into plants and you're a plant nerd, meaning
learning about the plants, what grows best here or wherever I'm going to be working at,
mm-hmm.
learning about native plants in the environment that you're landscaping in because they're better for your particular environment.
All right, let's go in that direction because one of the things that I hope is happening in the educational world is sustainability. You know, it's a big deal in horticulture these days. I'm wondering if the students are getting on board too. I mean, you're the future. Children are the future. You guys, if you guys aren't doing... I know I had a moment there. It came out of my mouth. And yes, Heather?
We got him.
Oh, he's there. That's good. Wow, that took a long time. Mr. Phelps.
Hey.
What the heck?
How are you, Mike?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am doing really well. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Well, that's all the time. Good night. It's great talking to you, Roger.
I'm glad I could help.
Okay, anytime.
Let's do this again sometime.
I've got Kathy Mano, who's one of the students at Joliet Junior College, who's been part of the student career days before, and you're on the board of Planet, which put this together. And what did you have in mind? And this is, well, it's 35th year of this. Has it always been under the auspices of Planet, or how did this get going?
Well, you know that over time, Planet actually is kind of the development from a couple of different organizations. But you know, whether it was PLACA or ALCA or any of the
don't you go throwing acronyms at
yes,
me, pal.
I know I'm acronym heavy this morning.
Okay.
I haven't had enough coffee, but no, I mean the bottom line is that the industry has definitely supported this. I mean, I was listening to your comments to Kathy about the future, and you're absolutely correct. I mean, if the future of our industry, these young people that are studying horticulture or landscape or whatever, you know, if they're not getting excited about the green industry, if they're not learning the latest in technology, the latest advances, you know, where's the green industry going to go? So I know that the professionals in the field have definitely been behind this event for years.
And that was the thing I was going to go right to Kathy about is what are you learning that landscapers in the past didn't know? Obviously, you already mentioned one thing, native plants, you know, getting that on your palate. And part of the knock on the green industry. And I'm going to say this, and I got my buddy Dan Costa, who's out in Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale, and he's going to say, don't go bashing the industry again. And I don't bash the industry. I feel like I'm just bringing it up to speed, helping you guys get up to speed, because it is important that, like other industries, horticulture, use the best techniques and the ones that are going to have the least impact on our environment. And obviously, native plants is one way to go. Hydrology is another. And you're nodding, Kathy, and I suppose you get some instruction in that and how we're changing the way we water our plants.
Right, using native plants that are used to our kind of rainfall here, mm-hmm. and bioswales, and you know, directing water into specific places in the landscape too.
All right. You say bioswale. Well, how would you describe a bioswale?
A bioswale is a area where your yard or whatever space you're working with has a dip into it, mm-hmm. but it's pretty wide, so most of the water from the area collects there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can plant plants in there that are used to that, so that way you don't have to worry about it, don't have to water them.
And you're not fighting nature.
Right.
You know, because normally what we would do, and Roger, you know this, you've seen it too, is the old way was, well, you got a dip in there, let's fill it up. We gotta put dirt in there because we don't want a dip. And then we got to put some plants that'll live on top of the dirt we put in there. And now it's, let's go with nature, keep the bioswale, keep the water running through there, use plants that that can survive in that kind of condition. And as it turns out, as you know, I'm sure, Kathy, a lot of those plants can filter the water and put it back into the aquifers in a way that other plants can't.
Exactly.
Roger, I look at all the different things that the students do, all these competitions. And as I mentioned on my website, when I was in college, I majored in pinball. It shows you how old I am too, because that even doesn't even exist. That, you know, that you can't get that degree anymore.
No. I think they retired it when you finished.
I think so. I wasn't any good at it either. So
okay.
It just shows you how sophisticated things are, and you must see some pretty remarkable things from students coming out of these colleges and universities.
You know, Mike, you're absolutely correct, and as I was listening to your conversation, I mean, I don't think the green industry has ever before been in the kind of position that it's in right now, where you've got advances being made almost on a daily basis. I mean, you know, we talk about the environment and caring for the environment and sustainability. I mean, the people probably, some of the people most qualified to do this are those that have been dedicating their lives, their educational careers, and their professional careers to this industry, and I'm amazed at the advances that I've seen and the passion that these students have for what they're doing. You know, I mean, it's so easy, as you said, to bash the industry and say, oh, these people don't care. But, you know, let's face it, we all breathe the same air. We all want to enjoy the same landscape. We all want to have, you know, the same clean environment. I just am amazed right now at the landscapers, the horticulturists, the land care managers. I mean, these people have made this their passion, their life, their study, and the advances in technology, I mean, putting the right plant in the right place, the advances in irrigation and using a combination of natural watering or planned irrigation, you know, rain barrels. I mean, whatever it is, I mean, what we're finding is let's create the right environment in the right place using the right technology so that we're balancing the needs of the human population, you know, our quality of life, with the quality of the environment. So, I am constantly impressed. I mean, this is probably one of my favorite events to go to. It is truly an amazing thing to see.
And mentioning that, and by the way, we're talking to Roger Phelps, who is on the board of the Professional Land Care Network. He's also with Steel Inc. Some people pronounce it Still. It's spelled STIHL, and you know them from the chainsaws and other things. If you want to put
outdoor power equipment would be a way to
Go
ahead and summarize.
Think orange. Maybe that should be your slogan. Think orange.
Think orange. Well, we like to say a greener shade of orange.
Oh, I like that. And Roger and I met last year when we were both working on the Still Tour de Trees, and we did the big broadcast in Millennium Park.
Great event.
It is a wonderful event, and I can't wait to see what happens this year. But you were talking about so much of this being hydrology, and I was talking, and right now, native plants, of course, are very important, but in the service of hydrology is what I'm seeing, is that it seems like every conference I go to right now, people are talking about water and how to move water or how not to move water, you know? And I look at the kinds of events you're going to have at the student career days at Joliet Junior College this week. At least three of them are irrigation. There's irrigation, irrigation assembly, irrigation design, irrigation troubleshooting.
Absolutely.
And yet there's, and I'm sure some of the other stuff is involves water as well and doesn't necessarily have to be irrigation. But your point is well taken that the industry has a chance to step up now, and all industries need to do this and be greener, even the green industry. I'm glad to see that you are doing this, encouraging students to step forward. Do you see contributions from students that make you think? Are they asking the questions that make the veterans in the industry say, hey, how come we never thought of that before?
You know, I think any industry is going to have that. I mean, any generation is going to challenge the mores and the thoughts of the previous generation, and I think that's a good thing. We need as an industry to keep pushing ourselves. I mean, are we doing the right things? I mean, you know, for instance, with steel right now, I mean, we're known for outdoor power equipment, gasoline powered. But, you know, the challenges that are facing our environment, I mean, we're stepping up to the plate. We're just launching, as you know, the battery powered equipment, zero emission. And, you know, again, that is the demand of the next generation saying, hey, we want things. I heard a great description of it. You know, in the baby boomer years, it used to be do it yourself. Then it became do it for me. And now it's do it, but do it differently. And I really think that that's where we are as an industry. It's like, okay, we're going to do it. We are the best at what we do, but we need to be thinking, okay, and challenging ourselves to do it differently, to do it right, to do it with lower emissions, use lower water, use the right plant, whether that's turf or whether that's natural, whether it's a different plant, it doesn't matter. I mean, whether it's trees or shrubs, that's what I enjoy seeing is that these young people are challenging and pushing the envelope and coming up with new ideas. We're all focused on the same goal. It's just, let's go ahead and see what we can do it and do it right.
And that's it. This, instead of do it differently, do it right.
Yeah,
you know,
correct.
It's like do it differently, but do it right.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, Kathy, you part of this is it's kind of a jobs fair. You're fortunate. You and I were talking before the show today that you already have a position. You work for a local landscaper, right?
Yes.
But having gone to school, left school, come back to school, gone through the job market, you know that between the time you first left school and came back and now you're in school, the economy has changed radically, and you're fortunate to have a job. What do you hear from your fellow students in terms of, you know, the ones who were just in school and looking for work? What are they saying about that?
Most of the people are looking for internships, so I think there's still a few that are still looking. I know last year, even, it took me a long time to find my final internship,
mm-hmm.
So I'm very lucky.
So is that the way it goes? You generally end up in an internship with a company, and then if you're good enough, they'll bring you on board?
That's the hope. I got really lucky.
You must be good. I mean, you can get, it's Moore Landscape.
Yeah.
And in the Chicago area, they're a big player. So obviously you knew what you were doing, and congratulations to you. And, you know, I think about all these other kids coming out into the landscaping business, Roger, and it is still a depressed economy, and it's a good thing that you've got companies that step up and are looking for those kids, but how much are they hiring?
Well, you know, I mean, the fact that we are having a career fair, the fact that there are companies there, and the fact that, as I walked through it 2 years ago, even when this recession really started, I mean, you know, there were companies there, and the sign was out, you know, we are hiring. So now, are the same number of jobs available as there were in the past? Probably not, but I'm definitely seeing some encouraging signs both in our industry, whether it's outdoor power equipment, our dealerships, the landscapers. I mean, we are seeing some cautious but definitely optimism. And, I mean, things are turning around, and I think people still see the need. I mean, I'm encouraged. We have some friends of ours at the state parks that will be at the career fair because they have job positions that are open. It is encouraging, and there are opportunities out there for people who want it.
That is Roger Phelps. He is with the Professional Land Care Network, also known as PLANET, the student career days at Joliet Junior College this Thursday, well, actually, yeah, Thursday through Sunday, basically, and with the big award ceremony on Sunday. I was going to try to get you guys for next week, but they said, no, we're doing the awards then. So I said, okay, let's, you know, you got to give out the awards when you have the competitions.
Yeah, when you got 1,000 students or so, yeah. We definitely want to make sure that we recognize them.
You know, that's the other thing. You got 1,000 Hort students descending upon Joliet. You know, that's... Is that a good thing? I think it is. I think it's a good thing, actually. Roger, thank you for being with me. And Kathy, thank you for coming into the studio. I appreciate that. Good luck to you and all your friends. What competitions are you planning to enter?
I'm in interior plant ID, interior plant design, and landscape installation.
And how many of these things can you do?
All of them.
Oh, so you just...
all of them.
Yeah, you'd have to be pretty darned ambitious to do that, I think. Roger, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say you're not going to find any slackers at this event, Mike. I tell you what, these are some dedicated people.
Okay, Roger, always a pleasure talking to you. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
And Kathy, thank you again for coming down to the studio. And good luck. Have fun next week. And congratulations on your job. And I hope things continue to go well for you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the next year for sure.
Okay. Take care. Now, if you're actually listening to my show right now, as opposed to having it on the radio so your schnauzer doesn't get lonely while you're at church, you know that I'm going cruising next year. And I don't mean through Tinley Park. Not that there's anything wrong with Tinley Park. Some terrific schnauzers live in Tinley Park. Here, boy, open the fridge. Get the beer. That's a good boy. Anyway, from February 25th to March 3rd, 2012, a year from now, I will be on the Norwegian Cruise Line's Norwegian Sun to visit the Caribbean destinations of Nassau, St. Thomas, San Juan, Great Stirrup Cay, and more. And I want you to come with me. We'll be exploring spectacular Zone 11 gardens on some of the most iconic tropical islands on the Northern Hemisphere. We'll be visiting gardens where orchids, bromeliads, and coconut palms are as common as dandelions are on parkways in the Midwest. Well, maybe not that common. But I will be your genial host for this excursion, and I'll share my insights about Midwest gardening along the way. Believe me, we're going to have a great time, and I hope you'll be on board. There are a couple of ways you can get more information. Call CruiseWorks at 800-876-6664. That's 800-876-6664. You can log on at www.cruise-works.com or just write to me, Mike at MikeNovak.net, and I'll send you all of the information you need. Come on, let's take a cruise together.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Well, we're in the middle of March already, and the weather has got us all in the mood to start digging in the dirt. And most of the digging in the dirt in my yard has been the squirrels digging up my bulbs. Gosh, they're ravenous. Anyway, Sid's Greenhouses is ready to help ease those cravings. Not for the squirrels, for you. Their shipment of spring bulbs has arrived with dozens of new varieties available. Get them now and get them in the ground soon as you can. You know, you got some time for you put the spring bulbs in now for the summer. So always pay attention to what bulbs you're buying. Take a look at what the recommended time to put them in because it's still early. But it doesn't mean you can't start cruising there and looking around to see what's available. This week, you'll save $1 on every package when you buy 4 or more. It's also the time to get seeds started for transplants, and SID still has a good selection of all the best varieties, including USDA Organics. If you don't have a yard to plant in, or even if you do, consider an earth box, the world's most revolutionary garden system. We used it here in the parking lot farm at WCPT last year, and we're going to do it again this year. You can use it to grow all sorts of vegetables or flowers with double the yield of conventional gardens with less fertilizer, less water, and virtually no effort. Now, if you're more of a tree person, listen up. The season's shipment of fruit trees has arrived at SIDS. Shop early for the best selection. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. For more information or to join their free email list for news, garden tips, and sale information, visit SIDSonline.com. Well, that's what we're going to figure out. We bring in Rick DeMille to find out if anybody should be worried about the weather in the next week. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing fine, Mike. I guess this is our normal time now, right?
yeah, I guess it seems to have evolved into that. Do you want to just, like, schedule it, make it to 9:45? We could do that.
Sure.
And I know you wait with bated breath. You sit there with your coffee. When's Mike going to get to me?
Oh, I mean, I listen to everything off the top of the show, and I'm doing some work around the house, and I'm grading papers and looking at it, those seagulls dive bomb into the lake, and checking my Richter scale as well.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. As a guy who's a fan of earth science, must have been amazed at what happened in Japan the other day.
Well, yeah, because, one of the classes I also teach is a natural disasters class, and I always used to think of a natural disaster as Thanksgiving in my house growing up, my mother trying to cook a meal.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh. Thank you!
usually, the more we tried to help as kids, the more you heard my mother scream, "Get out of the kitchen!" Because, obviously, either something was burning, something was breaking, something was falling. So, Thanksgiving in my house growing up as a kid wasn't the best of times. That's why my grandmother always liked to take it over. And you always had that argument between my mother and my grandmother of, you heard, "Why don't you think I can do this?" And my grandmother would just kind of like, kind of say in a very nice way, "Because you can't." But, speaking of the earthquake, you know what? It was amazing because I heard so many people say, "Oh my God, it looked like a movie." I kept hearing people say that, and I said, "You know what? This is what happens oftentimes across our, planet Earth. But we either A, don't have the video cameras to catch it, or B, it may be occurring in a remote area, or C, it may be occurring at night." And I think back to what actually occurred, during that fateful day on December 6, 2004, when you had that 9.3 quake, which was actually about 10 miles deeper than this particular quake, but because it was a little bit closer to the shoreline of Sumatra, the resultant tsunami actually occurred a little bit faster. But the main important thing here, Mike, is that those people in Sumatra had absolutely no warning. So even after the earthquake occurred, and of course there was just a lot more damage in a city like Banda Aceh because it was so much more densely populated, than the Sendai area in the Miyagi prefecture there. Most of the damage was really due to the tsunami, which they did have, at least a half hour to 45 minute warning, but it was still amazing waking up and looking at the video and going, "Oh my God, look at the force of, of water," and it blew me away. Just even though I've taught this stuff and I've seen it before, I think we all, you look at how the water was moving across Sendai Airport and it was pushing across that, that small little agricultural region there.
Yeah, Rick, what was interesting about that, and somebody pointed this out to me because I saw it pushing across it, and it's the one clip of video that keeps getting shown over and over again because I think it's the one that illustrates best what a wall of water really looks like. And
right.
And I went, why is that agricultural area so neat? And apparently a lot of those structures were hoop houses.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I just thought, oh, my goodness, and there they go. Then it's all swept away with everything that's coming in, and the water's dirty.
Right.
And it's that's the other thing. It's filled with debris, mm-hmm. and it's filled with sewage, and
right.
it's filled with soil and just everything, and it's all swept in there. And, yeah, that was when I realized those were hoop houses there. Now, every time I saw that clip, I just – well, seeing it the first time made you hold your
right.
breath.
Why don't you explain to your listeners what hoop houses are, in case there's some out there that don't know.
You know, you're right. It's you can take if you're growing crops and you want to protect them from the cold, one of the things you do is you take plastic and you put it over these hoops of metal, and
right.
then you attach it, and it holds in the heat
right.
in where you're growing them, and so you can extend your growing season. You can start earlier
right.
and grow later in the
right.
season. So, you know, Japan's up in the upper latitudes like we are, so it is still early spring there too, so they were trying
right.
to get a head start on their crops, so
mm-hmm.
those crops were underneath the plastic, probably plastic
right.
Or mesh, it might be mesh as well, of those hoop houses.
Yeah, Tokyo's latitude is about 37.5, and that northern part of Japan is, I think, around 41 to 42. Excuse me there. So when I was looking at that, I was talking to a friend of mine who does a lot of energy and agricultural forecasting. You know, there's not a lot of agricultural space in Japan. So where they have it, they you know, they try to get as much out of it. And I think one of the things that was helpful, just from a standpoint of you know, lessening the impact on, you know, human strife, is that particular area in the Sendai region was kind of flat. You can see where the tsunami, or at least the wave, and tsunami means harbor wave, was kind of pushing through, you know, some of the lowland areas, so the water kind of moving through, excuse me, one of the canals or the channels. Even though you saw cars still on the road racing to get away from it, I don't know, I was looking at the video again this morning, and I'm thinking to myself, my God, can you imagine? You hear this information on the radio, the helicopter obviously was getting this unbelievable footage, and can you imagine, you know, you're in the car driving, you obviously your horizontal vision isn't that good because this wall of water was, you know, even if it was probably a half mile away, there was no way you can see it, but can you imagine getting a traffic report and then telling you that the tsunami is about a half mile away and it's moving towards your road and you're trying to drive out of the way? Maybe the people in front of you don't know that. I just couldn't imagine what those people in that area during that time of the afternoon were going through. It was, it was surreal. And in this age of, you know, instant news and 24/7, I think we'll just end up expecting to see, you know, things more like that as we progress through the next, you know, 10, 20, 30, and 40 years. It's really quite amazing.
And the other thing is that Japan has the best early warning system in the world.
Oh, yeah.
All right? And even with the best early warning system in the world, we're going to find out that thousands of people perished. And in our country, our Congress is busily defunding early warning systems because they just cost too much money. It's just, you know, we can't. You know, what happens if we have a big quake on the West Coast? And it makes me wonder, are we is there such a thing as a more active earthquake pattern?
You know what? It's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I was looking at, I was talking about this first thing Friday morning. I was obviously going into class thinking, talking about meteorology, but I completely changed my subject matter. This was, I was teaching my class at Oakton that day. And that's a couple of questions that students brought up, and I was listening to your interview earlier about, are kids asking the right questions? You know, are they stretching their minds out? And I was amazed at how the students at Oakton were all asking the right questions. Could that happen here? And I think the answer is no. And the reason why is because the plate that causes the earthquakes, particularly in Southern California, the North American plate and the Pacific plate, basically meet up east of the Los Angeles area. That's where the San Andreas Fault basically begins, somewhere around the San Bernardino Mountain area, generally east of L.A., and then it runs right along the California coast to around Monterey, and that's one of the reasons why Monterey Bay is so deep, because the fault line, obviously many, many years ago, through subduction has channeled out a very, very deep area, you know, generally right along the coast. So I guess the best way to think about this is from about Santa Barbara and Los Angeles southward, the fault is inland, so any earthquake that would develop would obviously produce the damage inland, and any resultant tsunami would then move outward away from the Southern California area. When you go north of San Francisco, the San Andreas Fault basically runs right through the northwest part of the city of San Francisco and generally goes west of Golden Gate Bridge and the area around what's called Bodega Bay. That's the famous bay that Alfred Hitchcock filmed the movie The Birds in. And then that fault line generally runs right along the California coast and meets up with another plate called the Plate of Juan de Fuca. That plate is like a much, much smaller plate on top of a larger plate, similar to the plate that caused the earthquake down in Haiti a couple of years ago, actually a year ago. That plate, again, runs right underneath Northern California and into the western edge of Oregon and Washington. So if you think about it, where the large part of the plate meets the other plates, you have all these mountains that are volcanic. You have Mount Shasta, which is in Northern California, and then, of course, you have Mount Baker, Mount Adams, and Mount St. Helens, the famous one that blew up years ago. So if there would be an earthquake again, in my view here, the tsunami would generally not be generated right along the coast. It would probably move away from the coast. The only one I think we would have to worry about is what happened back in 1964 when you had this earthquake of 9 magnitude or greater in Prince William Sound in Alaska. That's the only way I think that the U.S. coast would probably see a devastating tsunami. And they did back in 1964 when that harbor wave came into that extreme northern part of California around Eureka and Crescent City. It was about a 15-foot wave, and that's the one that I think swept about 10 or 12 people to their deaths only because they went to the to shoreline to see it. And, of course, they got to see it.
Yeah. Well, earthquakes are a fascinating part mm-hmm. of geology, and we could go on all day about that.
Sure.
And all you got to do is turn on CNN or MSNBC,
right.
and you're going to see it all day long anyway. How about weather for this week?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because looking at the pattern, again, I think you had mentioned last week and the week before that the weathermen are having a kind of a difficult time more than 3 or 4 or 5 days out. And still the pattern for this week is kind of touch and go here. About 4 or 5 days ago, it appeared that we were going to have a mild pattern beginning Tuesday and Wednesday. But what begins to happen in situations like this, Mike, is that you end up with your jet stream beginning to move a little bit further to the north of you, basically each week. And when that happens, these systems that come out of the west coast, instead of being picked up by the jet stream and pulled very quickly from west to east, they're kind of left to do things on their own. So it's almost like you lose your kid in the local, you know, Target or Walmart. Instead of pulling them along like the jet stream would, the kid is all of a sudden kind of like looking around, wandering around, wondering what to do. And I think that's what's happening with the pattern this week. We have a storm system coming out of the Rocky Mountains. It looks like it's going to produce some clouds and some rain on us during the day on Tuesday. But seriously, one thing I have to really say here is that winter is over. Even 2 weeks ago, and I was looking at everything long term, I'm like, I think it'd be safe to say that we're not going to see any more in the way of any Arctic air, any more in the way of any big snowstorms. I think it's safe to say that we're not going to see anything more of a shovable or a plowable snow. I'm thinking if we get maybe one more snow of 2 inches for the rest of the winter, well, winter only really has another week to go. But between now and probably about the first week of April, if we have one more snow event out of this, that's about it. So cloud, sunshine today, mid-40s, normal high is right around that time. Good day to maybe check out the last day of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, the last day, obviously, today at Navy Pier.
That's right.
Tomorrow, another day similar to today, a little bit of mixture of clouds and sun. And then Tuesday, we probably could see a little bit of rain. And then the pattern is trying to get mild for the rest of the week, and it tries to, but it doesn't really get that warm. So we'll say mid-40s between now and probably Tuesday, maybe low 50s or close to that late Wednesday and into Thursday. But still, the bottom line is it's very, 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 very wet out east. So I think everybody gets a chance to kind of dry out this week. So kind of a benign weather pattern, but hopefully nothing in the way of any you know, major earthquakes coming back across the western part of the Pacific. And we always have to think about how the energy kind of translates to the eastern part. So obviously a lot of people, even in California, even though they haven't really been affected by any of these quakes over the last several years, in the back of their mind, trust me, they're thinking about it.
I'll bet they are. And I love the good gradual warm-up. That's just the way we like it in the spring. So, thank you, Rick DeMaio Weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and all the information is there. Always great to hear from you, and we will talk next week.
Talk at 9:45, Mike.
Yeah, about that. Okay.
Oh, by the way, I'll be on Channel 2 this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. Probably not the mornings tomorrow, but I'll be on the 11 o'clock show with Roseanne Tejas and Harry Porterfield. And I think Wednesday and Friday I'll be on the mornings all the way from 4:30 to 9 a.m.
Oh, you love it.
Hopefully I'll have something to talk about.
And the last time you did it, you only got double pandemonium. I mean pneumonia. And,
yeah, well, hopefully my body is a little bit better.
Yeah, but you know what I got to love about this? You were just like, you're out there. Whatever station needs you, there you go. I love that. It's like, just get Rick. He's the go-to guy.
Yeah, but my heart's with WCPT. Don't worry about that.
Oh, I don't believe it for a second. All right. I'll talk to you next week, Rick.
Okay, Mike.
All right. In the second hour today, we will be talking to Jim Slama, who's the founder and president of FamilyFarm.org. The Family Farmed Expo is coming up this coming week from Thursday through Saturday at the UIC Forum. And we'll also be talking to Bob Martin from Pew Environmental Group about antibiotics in animals. So stick around after CNN News.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I should have known that, as I kind of predicted, my buddy Dan Costa was listening. I'm always glad when he is listening to the show. And he just wrote to me, he says, hey, I agree that the industry, and he's talking about the horticultural industry, I agree that the industry has to be environmentally responsible. We need to use the right plant in the right place and water wisely. We need to use safer pesticides and fertilizers. This is all what we need. But as a person in the industry, I know it's happening, but it won't change overnight. Technology and training have to progress to make the changes happen. And he's right. I mean, and that's kind of the whole deal behind the student career days over at Joliet Junior College this week is teaching students those safer, saner techniques, and it's kind of what I try to do on this very show.
Yes, you succeed. You're not always aware of the success, but you do succeed.
Well,
I've kept my houseplants alive. Thanks, Mike Novak.
Oh, stop it. We got to do more of those. Do we have Jim? Should we get the...
Yes, well, let's get Jim on the phone.
Let's get Jim Slama. We'll say that I'm just like everybody else. I'm just doing my best to get by here. I look at the world and sometimes you think it's just going to hell in a handbag. Have workers having their rights taken away and tsunamis killing people. And wow, I could talk about a lot of these things, but, you know, I try to stay focused on the horticultural end of things because that's my niche, as they say. And I know that what I talk about affects other things, too, or other things affect what I talk about. I mean, everything's connected. And the more I do this, the more I sit here and talk to folks about gardening and about food and about pesticides and the environment, the more I realize it's all connected. It's scary sometimes how it's all connected. And then, you leave here and bump into something in your daily life that that you referred to earlier, and it all comes round and round. So I'm happy to have anybody write to me at any time, call me, you know, whenever you think.
It's not easy being green.
No. As I found out last week, sometimes you say things off the cuff and they come back and they bite you. You're right. It's not always easy being green, but we do our darndest. And let's go to line one and bring in a guy who's been working really hard at this for a long time as well. That's Jim Slama, who's the president and founder of FamilyFarmed.org. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Mike. It's great to be here. I'm doing great. Awesome.
Well, yeah, because you're in sunny California, aren't you?
It's pretty sunny out here. There's a big natural products expo going on, and we're visiting some of the folks out there. There's 50,000 people actually come to the show. It's quite interesting.
Wow.
So it's been a good time out here.
Well, you know, that actually takes me to a question that I was going to have for you with the Family Farmed Expo coming up this week here in Chicago. And I was just wondering, because you obviously go to other expos that do different things. What about Family Farmed? Is there anybody doing exactly what you're doing anywhere else?
Not really like this. We kind of combine both a trade show and, you know, building the capacity of the good food movement to grow the business side. It goes on Thursday and Friday. We've got a financing conference. And then on Thursday in a trade show with, you know, school food focus and, you know, restaurants and hospitals and distributors all coming together on Friday to do business. And then Friday night we've got a big party benefit. Saturday we have, you know, three or 4,000 people coming to, you know, go to workshops and see cooking demos and all that kind of stuff. It's a very unique mix that's all about, you know, building the movement, bringing people together, bringing our community together, and we're really pleased with it, and we think it's a very vital thing, and the model, we believe, is replicable and can be done in other markets.
Well, what is impressive is the extent, as you say, you cover everything. You know, you've got the businesses coming together in food production, processing, distribution, and financing farm to fork on Thursday. But and you mentioned the trade show on Friday. But there's also the Food Policy Summit, where you've got a bunch of folks who talk about the future of food and how we affect policy, which is all part of this summit as well. As a matter of fact, later on this hour, I'm going to have Martha Boyd from Angelic Organics Learning Center talk about the very specifics about where ordinances are going in Chicago that affect farming within the city limits.
No doubt.
Which is, and it's a huge issue, and it's hard work slogging through that policy, isn't it?
No question about it. We're thrilled to have the Chicago Food Policy Advisory Council as a partner in that day. In essence, the advisory council takes the programming. You know, they recruit people to come. It's a very affordable ticket, $40 for a whole day, which includes lunch. And so, yeah, people have their choice. They can either do the Food Policy Council track, where there's, you know, lots of different workshops. You can also do the trade show. The opening symposium has 9 great speakers. We've got a USDA undersecretary, Erica Allen from Growing Power, is speaking. We've got, you know, experts in school food. We've got Bob Skaman, the largest organic distributor in the Midwest, speaking. Sheila Simon, the lieutenant governor of Illinois, is speaking on that opening symposium, as well as the head of the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. You know, for us, when we're bringing in policymakers at the level of you know, lieutenant governor and the head of the Department of Commerce, it's a very significant event, and they're realizing that there's billions of dollars of economic activity with food production, processing, distribution, sales, that, quite honestly, we're leaving on the table by not having a very a super strong focused approach at building more local food systems and the infrastructure that's necessary for local food systems here in the state. And so Now we've got, you know, leading policymakers who are coming to the expo and the summit. You know, they're participating and recognizing that if the state does take, you know, positive, proactive steps to, you know, support the growth of this movement and the business of this movement, that it's going to create a lot of jobs and economic opportunity. And I think that's one of the reasons that Rahm Emanuel, in his race for mayor, was very proactive, you know, came out in support of urban ag, came out, you know, in support of really addressing food deserts and getting good food into every neighborhood in Chicago, not just neighborhoods, you know, that are more affluent. So, you know, we think that's going to be a great day.
You're talking about the real Rahm Emanuel, not the fake Rahm Emanuel, right?
No doubt about it.
I don't even know if you were aware of the whole Twitter thing, but...
I am.
Yes. Because
expletives, I think, when he's talking about food deserts.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the fake Rahm Emanuel tweeted about food deserts. Unless he had said blanking food deserts or something like that. But so that, you know, you just talk about the policy stuff. But then, of course, on Saturday, and I should mention that I've got links to a lot of this on my website, but you can always, it's a lot easier if you just go to familyfarmedexpo.com, and you can get the whole rundown, and you could spend a day just looking at all the links that Family Farmed has up there. But I've put some of the salient ones up on my website, mikenovak.net, and you go to this week's show, and it's up there. And one of the things, you know, you've got the financing Farm to Fork on Thursday. You've got the policy food policy summit on Friday, and these are for in essence the wonks and the business people and the, you know, those who have a real vested interest in there and stakeholders. But then it seems like Saturday you kind of, well, actually, you know, starting kind of with Localicious Party, which is the big party you have on Friday serving local food. That's when you
say, and local libations. Don't forget that.
Okay, obviously.
That's the tip one, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. Then Saturday, it seems like starting from that point and going on to Saturday, it's, you sort of open the floodgates and say, okay, let's all have fun. Let's get involved, because on Saturday you've got the cooking demos and the educational workshops and the kids' corner and booths where people can learn about various products. It's really a crazy fair, because, you know, I remember last year, because I spoke last year. I'm speaking again this year. I'm actually moderating a panel this year. And it's the panel I'm moderating is Small Space Gardening, How to Grow Food in Your Backyard, on Rooftops, Back Porches, and in Containers, both indoors or out, which everybody wants to know about. And I've got some great guests or great people who are on that panel. But that's just the kind of thing. And if you go into the forum, and I remember last year, the energy was just palpable. People buzzing around and going into the main hall to see the booths and going into seminars. It must be, to you, very exciting to see all that happening.
Well, you know, it reflects the energy of this movement and the energy of the event. You know, I mean, you were talking about this 3 days. We've got over 160 speakers over 3 days. That just boggles my mind. First of all, the fact that our small little staff has put together an event with that level, and they're, you know, many of them are nationally significant speakers. Will Allen, you know, Mr. MacArthur Genius, and Gary Hirschberg, the founder of Stonyfield Farms, who took his 7-cow dairy into a, you know, $350 million company. The head of Farm Credit is at the financing conference to talk about, you know, wow, how do we as farm financiers and farm bankers start supporting these small to mid-sized farms and food businesses that are growing and badly need capital. So it's a big deal. There's lots of folks. And then on Saturday, it really hits a crescendo because, you know, the floodgates open up and thousands of people come, you know, not only for workshops, but also for cooking demos. And we've got over 150 vendors. You know, some of them are CSAs, you know, farmers who are, you know, looking to sell a share in their farm for the upcoming season, or, you know, meat producers or value-added producers who have, you know, jams or jellies or, you know, other cool products. that you know you can purchase or get to know what farmers market these folks might be.
Heck, last year,
selling at in the coming year.
Yeah, last year I ran into a guy there who was selling a new fish fertilizer product, and he said they were trying to harvest the Asian carp in the
exactly.
Illinois River.
Let's, you know, let's figure out something constructive to do with them.
It's just that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been in the forefront of this movement. You've seen it grow over the years. Where are we going from here? I think in the first few years, you were just kind of waving your arms to get people's attention. Do you feel like you've gotten past that point?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is how do we increase the volume of local food that's available in this marketplace. And it's interesting because you kind of bring up the transition Friday into Saturday. And, you know, Friday evening at 5:30, there's a workshop, so you want to be a farmer. And that includes, and this one's free, by the way. It's the only free event that we're having because it's so good. And so many people are interested in farming as a career that we wanted to make it available. So, you know, we've got Angelic Organics. We've got Growing Home. We've got the Chicago Botanic Garden. Patsy is moderating. We've got Mike Sands from the Prairie Crossing Farm Business Development Center, which actually has an incubator for people who want to become farmers. They can take 2 acres and start growing food and being mentored by other nearby farmers. So that's a great panel. And we need more farmers to meet this demand for local food. So, you know, that's going to be a cool thing. Oh, and I forgot the headliner of that panel is a guy named Michael O'Gorman, who's grown $200 million of organic farms in recent years for, you know, big companies like Earthbound Farms and Del Cabo. But he left that business growing commercially. He's now running a nonprofit called the Farmer Veteran Coalition, and he works with Iraqi veterans and Afghani veterans to teach them to be farmers. And, I mean, what an amazing thing. In fact, the New York Times just had a front-page story on him profiling, you know, him and this Farmer Veteran Coalition. So people can go and hear Michael, you know, talk about, and all these other, you know, local experts talk about the, you know, the business of farming. You know, and then, boom, we go into Saturday, and, you know, we've got Mike Nowak moderating a panel on small space gardening with, you know, Jeannie Nolan from, you know, who's doing the, you know, the Green City Markets Garden in Lincoln Park Zoo, or Ron Nowicki, who's been, you know, doing this for, you know, 20 years. Milton Dixon, a permaculture expert. You know, Dave Snyder is doing Antiques Roadshow, you know, the Chicago Rarities Organic, Chicago Rarities Orchard Project, you know, talking about heirloom plants. And with John Cavney, you know, just a guru at doing organic poultry and turkey. Gene Mielhau, who, you know, runs Tiny But Mighty Popcorn, this amazing, flavorful heirloom popcorn that they really saved from extinction. And now, you know, through crop breeding, he's made it commercially viable. And, you know, it's now available at all the Whole Foods stores. So, you know, the whole day, probably a third of it is geared towards growing and preserving your own food, you know, composting. Backyard chickens is another panel that's just super popular. We've got a panel on preserving and canning food with Paul Varon from V, who's one of the hottest restaurants in Chicago, Tara Brockman, Bob Gardner from the local Beat, Vicky Nowicki, our good friend who I'm usually on the show with. I'm not sure why I'm not this year, Mike. Something's going on here. Maybe it's because I'm in California. We got you late. Vicky, if you're out there, we miss you, and we're looking forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Oh, she's been on the show a lot lately, and I've been plugging her website, libertygardens.com, which I think has got some great information. She's very practical about food growing, and don't worry, Vicky is always in my heart, and she's always welcome on the show. You know what? I want to, before I let you go, I want to remind people of the one thing you said, that free workshop, which is on Friday from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Again, this is at the UIC Forum, and it's called So You Want to Be a Farmer. That is, and I think I applaud you for giving people a chance to come in for free and sit in and hear these great speakers. Sherry Doyle is on has been on the program many times. She helps me with my Good Growing segment. And as you said, Michael O'Gorman and Larry O'Toole and Mike Sands and Patsy Venveniste. And then you your timing is perfect, obviously, Jim, because people will walk out of that right into the localicious party.
How'd you figure that out? You're so smart.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this planning here. I just got tweeted from Melissa Graham. I've had her on the program before, and she says if folks wanted to volunteer to work with kids at Family Farmed and with the purple asparagus, you can contact her. So I'm glad she posted that. So
well, and Melissa and Purple Asparagus run the Kids Corner, which is, you know, a huge part of the Saturday Expo. It's right next to the chef's demos, and, you know, it's a great opportunity for, you know, kids and parents to, you know, learn and be part of this sustainable local food community. Melissa's been doing that forever, and I think she's done the Kids Corner every year that we've done the Expo, and, you know, it's a really great place to engage families in this good food movement, which we're excited about. And then the chef demos next door, we've got 10 of the best chefs in Chicago, and we're pairing two chefs and a farmer in these demos, you know, which is, you know, such an exciting thing. So we've got, you know, Bill Kim from Urban Belly and Paul Veron from V with Tracy Ball from Three Sisters Farms. You know, so, you know, what a fun pairing of, you know, talented cooks and an amazing farmer. They're all bickering with each other and, you know, playing off of each other. Stephanie Izzard from Girl and the Goat and, you know, Top Chef winner is actually doing a vegetarian panel or demo with Kim Grayson from the Chicago Diner and Nichols Farm, who's, you know, the biggest farmer's market farmer in Illinois. So, you know, really high quality chefs and cooking demos. And, you know, and it's something I need to say, we made a bit of a change this year in our pricing. So there's different levels of pricing that people need to be aware of before they come to the expo. Last year, it was like you buy one ticket for, you know, $20 and you get in for a whole day. This year, because the workshops last year were so packed, and some people didn't go to the workshops, they just went to the cooking demos or to the exhibit floor. So in advance, they can buy a $10 ticket and do the, you know, the cooking demos and the chef demos and the exhibit floor. For $25, they can do that and all the workshops. And then for $35, they can also attend a three-hour workshop by Sally Fallon. Sally's amazing. She's been a pioneer in things like whole animal consumption and, you know, eating products from raw products or fermented products. Her book, Healing Nourishing Traditions, you know, when I was talking to Monica Eng from the Chicago Tribune about this, she's like, and Monica's a, you know, incredible reporter. She's like, oh, Sally Fallon's book's on my nightstand, you know, because she's been doing this for so long and really was on the forefront of so many aspects of really cutting-edge nutrition for the past 10 years, in part based on the research of a dentist, Weston Price, who went into indigenous cultures, you know, looked at their diets, looked at their health, and also looked at their dental health, and then kind of documented the fact that people who were eating these traditional diets were really healthy, had no cavities, and were just fabulous. And so based on that, then Sally has kind of taken it to a next level with research and writing about it. And for people who are interested, they can spend 3 hours with her, spend the whole day at workshops at the expo and cooking demos and everything else for $35 if they register online, which is definitely the best deal for any conference in town.
Well, I noticed that when I was doing research on it, so I on my website I put a link to the fee structures so they can go right there and take a look at what they might want to do. And folks, as you heard, it's for kids, it's for adults, it's for farmers, it's for non-farmers, it's for just for anybody who loves food. And I think that includes pretty much everybody. Jim Slama, president and founder of FamilyFarm.org, I hope to tip one with you at the Localicious. And have a great weekend. I'm sure the event's going to go very well. And by the way, when I let you go, I'm going to be talking to Bob Martin, who's going to be on one of your panels, too. We're going to get a little more serious about things, talk about antibiotics in animals. But that's kind of what I do on this show sometimes.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate your ongoing support for this entire movement, your great journalism, and your passion for promoting, you know, growing food and good food.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll see. I'll see you soon.
Okay, see
Take
you
care.
In a couple of days. Okay,
you
betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's a Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Spring is coming, and so are the pests. You can wait until they start appearing to worry, or you can pick up some of Bonide's all-season spray oil and start treating the eggs now. The oil, which is not a poison, so it won't affect the soil or water, is recommended for fruit trees, shade trees, shrubs, ornamentals, roses, and vegetables. All-season spray oil will work to suffocate fledgling mites, scale, aphids, bud moths, galls, mealybugs, and more. It's available in ready-to-use quarts and in concentrate form, also in a convenient ready-to-spray formula, which features a built-in hose and attachment for easy application. Go green this year, or go home, as we say. Try all-season spray oil by Bonide. Let me remind you also to read and follow label directions. Been having interesting conversations lately with people about that, and I insist that you read and follow label directions. Now, you can find Bonide at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center in both Palos Hills and in Bolingbrook, and at Allsip Home and Nursery in Frankfort, Illinois. Or go to Bonide.com to find a retailer near you, or for a complete product listing of a Bonide's Garden Naturals line.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. All or part of 25 Illinois counties from the Wisconsin state line, as far south as Champaign and Vermilion counties, have confirmed or are likely to confirm cases of emerald ash borer. It is expected every county in the state will eventually be affected, threatening the state's more than 100 million ash trees. Homeowners and civic leaders asking questions about their own trees and EAB are encouraged to contact a certified arborist like those at the Care of Trees. Certified arborists can assess trees, provide counsel on treatment and next steps, and ensure the safety of home and property should any trees need to be removed. Now, if you're concerned about EAB, call upon the certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the ash trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. We're playing this in honor of my major in college. And by the way, as always, if you have a question or a comment, the number is 773-838-9278. You could also write Mike at MikeNovak.net. Let us go to line two. Bring in Bob Martin, who is a senior officer with the Pew Environment Group. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well, Mike. Good morning, and thank you for having me on your program.
My pleasure, because you're talking about something at Family Farmed, and this whole hour, in one way or another, is kind of connected to the Family Farmed Expo. You're going to be on a panel on Saturday, and as I talked to Jim Slama, Saturday's the day when we want everybody to just show up and participate in discussions, learn and talk and find out about new products and ideas. And one of the things you're doing that I think is so important is you have been investigating the idea of antibiotic use in animals that are used for consumption. I was kind of surprised by something I found on the Pew website, that up to 70% of all antibiotics sold in the U.S. are given to healthy food animals. I guess the operative word there is healthy. I'm surprised and dismayed. Why is it so high?
Well, it's because of the living conditions or the production system itself, Mike. And actually, new government statistics show that the figure is closer to 80% of the antibiotics used in the country are given to healthy animals in low doses, routine daily low doses, to compensate for the overcrowding and poor waste management system that we use to produce pork, eggs, and broiler chickens that we eat. So it's really worse than the estimates that we originally had. And what's a real concern, I mean, this is a very serious public health threat, and here's why. Because this 80% of the antibiotics that are being used in food animal production are the same antibiotics that we take as humans to cure bacterial infections, whether it's strep throat or something as not serious as acne. Any time that these antibiotics are used in low doses, like is common in industrial farm animal operations, it is a major cause of antibiotic-resistant bacteria that can then lead to harder and harder to treat infections. The Chicago area is really a leader on sustainable food, and there's also a leader at the University of Chicago, Dr. Robert Dahm, in studying the methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, or MRSA, which is becoming more and more of a problem, and resistant Staph, resistant E. coli, resistant Campylobacter that can all make us very sick and be fatal, have links to food animal use.
I've read several of Michael Pollan's books, and in one of them, The Omnivore's Dilemma, he talks about this and why so many antibiotics are used. And one of the distressing things is it's apparently to help cows digest corn, which their bodies are really not set up for. They, you know, if you feed them grass, it's one thing. You feed them corn, it leads to all kinds of problems, and then you have to tweak with antibiotics. Is that the case?
Yes, that is the case in beef cattle production. All beef cattle start out on pasture, but some are not grass-fed their entire lives. Some are moved to feedlots in the last 6 months of their life or last 4 months of their lives. They're fed a very high protein ration of corn and other grains, and because you're right, they're designed as ruminants to digest grass. That's why they have so many stomachs. The very high protein content of the grain diet, which makes them fatter, and as Americans, we love fat marbled meat, but it also causes fairly serious health problems in the animal themselves, primarily liver abscesses, which if they go untreated will obviously kill the animal. It's like liver cancer in the animal, and so they're given antibiotics to keep them healthy in this short period of time because they're being fed an unnatural diet of corn and other grains. In the case of sows or swine, it's not unusual to have in these industrial operations 10 to 15,000 animals in one barn. They're kept in, when they're pregnant, the sows are kept in these crates where they can't turn around. They can only move forward and backwards with some difficulty. And they can lay down with some difficulty. But because they're not allowed to move around, their waste is dropped through a floor and washed out from under the barn. And so that creates, as you might guess, an environment that is just perfect for growing bacteria, and so they're fed in the case of pigs these low doses of the same antibiotics we use daily to keep them from getting sick. And, you know, we don't need to do that. We just we need to begin changing the production system to get away from using so many antibiotics.
Yeah, but that would the obvious follow-up question is, why do we allow this? How do we get away from this? It seems to me that big food is big money, and big money rules, and is our Congress smart enough to save, you know, and I love that you get to the heart of it by calling your website Save Antibiotics. It's no less than saving antibiotics, and by that, it's saving our population, perhaps saving the world, because if we don't have antibiotics, if they stop working for us, if we're getting those antibiotic-resistant bugs out there, we're done, right?
Well, that is right. I mean, the head of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Tom Frieden, says that he is worried that we are approaching the post-antibiotic era in medicine. So yes, this routine overuse is really, you know, spreading the problem of antibiotic-resistant infections. And the problem is antibiotics in food animal production are regulated by the Food and Drug Administration, and there's a division within the FDA called the Center for Veterinary Medicine. They have for the first time in about 32 years, begun reviewing antibiotic use in food animal production. So you have to credit the Obama administration with at least bringing the subject up, saying, you know, we're overusing antibiotics in food animals. We need to take a look at the guidelines and regulations. But the problem is the Center for Veterinary Medicine is kind of a captured agency. And by that, I mean, so many of the people there have ties to the industrial animal ag sector that it's there's an internal battle going on right now about how meaningful any rule change is going to be. So it's you know, it's it should be handled regulatorily, but there's also a role for Congress to play. There's been legislation in the past, the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act, to restrict the use. That's been reintroduced this Congress on the Senate. That's in the House. On the Senate side, there's comprehensive antibiotic reduction legislation being considered that I think will be introduced in the next couple of months. So,
and honestly, what are its chances? I mean, as you mentioned, and it applies to Congress as well as regulatory agencies. So often there are connections to the very businesses they're supposed to regulate. How do you get these laws passed?
Well, I think it's uphill. I won't kid you, Mike. I think it's uphill. But one of the ways to do it is for people to speak out. Your listeners need to contact, you know, Senator Durbin and Kirk and or their representative and talk about this. Pew Human Health and Industrial Farming Campaign is organizing moms around the country to be active on this issue, because moms get this probably faster than just about anybody.
Why is that?
Well, I think because they take their kids in and they see that they go through three or four rounds of antibiotics to solve the strep throat that their child may have.
And right, and where it should take one. And in the old days, maybe it was it. You just took the antibiotic and it knocked it back and you moved on with your life. And now they're going in three and four times. Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly right. And that is because, I mean, there's some overuse on the human side, but when 80% of the antibiotics go to food animals, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out, you know, that's where the main problem lies.
You know, wouldn't it be just nice if somebody, I just want somebody to stand up on the floor of Congress and say, this is insane. We've got to stop this. We're killing ourselves. What the heck? And you say it's uphill and fighting for sanity is uphill. Fighting for our very lives and for the medicines that have made us healthier is uphill. That's just sad. But I'm glad you're out there fighting it. And I would ask what kind of, you know, you say that the Pew organization has gotten the word out among moms. I mean, how effective do you think the work has been with the Pew organization?
Well, I think we're making some headway. I mean, you know, this bill, PAMTA, the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act, has been around for about 10 years. On the House side, it never had had any hearings on the House side. Had at most probably 20 or 30 co-sponsors. with Pew's help and a lot of other organizations working with Pew. We had about 135 co-sponsors in the last Congress. There were three hearings on antibiotic use in food animals in the last session. The same bill on the Senate side last year had 17 co-sponsors, and previously it the most it ever had was four. So it's a long process, unfortunately, on something that you said is really common sense, and it is. I would say that that Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky in the Chicago area gets this and has been a real staunch advocate for reducing use in food animals. So there are some really positive things. It's just, you know, when you're up against the combined money and influence of Big Ag, and or as they say in Iowa, Big Pig, because of the you know, the meat animal companies, it's tough.
Absolutely. You know, I'm glad you mentioned, I've got to get Congresswoman Schakowsky on the show. God love her. She's just, she does everything right as far as I'm concerned. She just seems to be take the right side of things all the time, and I'm glad she's a champion of this issue. Well, you're speaking on Saturday at Family Farmed Expo. Your panel is called Cheap Food is Not Healthy Food. Bob is going to be on that panel. And, oh, gee, you know what? I thought I had a link. Oh, no, I know. It's a link right to let's see here. Mine's at 2 to 3:15. Yours is at 3:30 to, I believe, 4:45 or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you're going to be on with some awfully good people there as well. And I hope, since this is such an important issue, that you get some folks in there talking about this, and it's a pleasure to have you on the program, Bob, and I hope we get to meet in person sometime.
Thank you, Mike. I'll look forward to meeting you. I was out last year for the expo, and, you know, Jim Slama does an amazing job organizing that there in the Chicago area, and I know he's doing others around the country as well now, and I really look forward to being in Chicago again, because there's such a strong interest in sustainable food there.
And as I said before, all of this information is on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you'll see a link to Bob and his credentials, which are substantial, and especially the Pew Environmental Group and the Save Antibiotics sites. Reading that will, I don't know, It'll send chills up your spine, and not in a good way. But at least you're doing good work. So we will talk, and I will see you next Saturday, Bob.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. We're into the middle of March already, and the weather has got us all in the mood to start digging in the dirt. Sid's Greenhouses is ready to help ease those cravings. And let me say something at the outset here. Careful. Let's be careful out there, kids, because it's still early, and the ground...
Do you need to put boards in your...
Very good. You have learned a couple of things here.
Thanks, Mike Novak.
We got to get that that little thing here, the thanks, Mike Novak. I can bring that up. And
But yeah, so you don't want to compress the soil.
Compact.
Compact. Well,
it's
compress,
okay. It's okay.
The soil. I used the wrong C word.
It's kind of the same thing, you know. Let's see. Do we have it here? Oh, I don't have it right here. Okay, I gotta find the thanks.
But that's bad, because then you're taking the air out.
Keep talking.
And you want aeration in your soil to plant seeds.
Uh huh.
And I'm falling short here now, buddy. You gotta help me.
it's mainly about compaction. It's that whole idea that once you compact your soil, it's really hard to uncompact it, and you squish the air out of it, and if it can't drain, it's not good for roots. So at this time of the year, it's early. Sid's tells you, be careful in the garden when you're walking around there. You don't want to confine. I cannot find the thanks, Mike Novak. I was looking for this in my audio. All right, we'll track it. We'll track it down later. Back to SIDS. This week, you'll save $1 on every package of bulbs when you buy four or more. And again, read the label directions for when to put those in, or check it out online. It's also time to get seed started. A lot of people are doing that for transplant. SIDS still has a good selection of all the best varieties, including USDA Organics. And even if you don't have a yard to plant in, consider an earth box, the world's most revolutionary garden system. Use it to grow all sorts of vegetables or flowers with double the yield of conventional gardens with less fertilizer, less water, and virtually no effort. Now, if you're more of a tree person, guess what? The season shipment of fruit trees has arrived. Shop early for the best selection. SID, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. For more information or to join their free email list for news, garden tips, and sale information, visit SIDsOnline.com.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I think I found it. I think it goes something like this.
Thanks, Mike Novak.
There we go. I knew it was here someplace. T-minus 7 days and counting. The first day of spring is exactly 1 week away. And I have no idea what I'm going to wear next Sunday. Oh, where's my smelling salts? I think I just channeled Olivia de Havilland. The point is, if you want to get ready for spring, you need the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. You definitely want to pick this up because you get two publications for the price of one. Not only do you get the Midwest's best guide to Zone 5 gardening, that's the magazine, you also receive the annual resource guide, a separate booklet that has information about garden center seeds, classes, tools and equipment, supplies, structures and hardscapes, books and publications, arboretums, greenhouses, and florists, aquatic and pond supplies, landscape design and installation services, and much more. How do they do it in one magazine? And of course, there's my column on the inside back page. If you don't like that, Scarlett, frankly, my dear, I don't give a darn. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600 or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Thanks, Mike Novak.
You're welcome. Oops, you got to stop that. And what do Ball Horticultural, the Lincoln Park Zoo, Elmhurst College, and Motorola have in common? You ask what? What could that possibly be? They have all been partners with WRD Environmental, an ecological consulting firm that has created sustainable landscapes since 1997. WRD Environmental designs, installs, manages, and consults on projects and programs that conserve natural resources, promote sustainability, cultivate biodiversity, and restore nature's balance. But just as important, WRD is a good partner, whether it's managing a large-scale conservation development or cultivating a community greening initiative. Clients trust WRD to anticipate, prevent, and solve potential problems. WRD Environmental takes a comprehensive approach to every project, keeping the overall objectives in mind and building teams along the way to achieve the best results. WRD is all about innovation and execution with unparalleled focus. So when you're looking for a partner to help your business literally change the world around it, choose WRD. WRD Environmental, where the built and the natural environments meet.
Thanks, Mike Novak.
Rolling down Highway 95. The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And before I get to Martha, who's waiting to talk more about local food and policy. Heather, I wanted to get you in here because a couple of things we want to get to before we say goodbye. I want to make sure I get them in. Governor Quinn still has not made a decision on the coal gasification plants in Chicago and downstate.
And the rumor has he has to make a decision by tomorrow.
It's not a rumor.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what he has to do.
Tomorrow. It's either going to be law, become a law or be vetoed. So it's on the MikeNovak.net webpage down in the lower right-hand corner. It's for the Sierra Club of Illinois. You go there, you click it, you send word to the governor that we want this vetoed.
And the way I look at it, the governor did a very courageous thing this week signing the bill that abolishes the death penalty in Illinois. And I heard Mike Sanders earlier, and they were all going, well, yeah, I like it, but I like it, but me, I like it. There's no but. This is the right thing to do. We do not kill people. A civilized society does not kill people. All right? We can lock them away forever. And studies I've seen, and the people who argue about the cost, my taxpayer dollars paying for them, studies I've seen indicate that it costs more to execute somebody than it does.
It actually does. It costs over $3 million to execute one person, especially after you've exhausted the appeals process.
Exactly. So there's no, so you don't win. Execution is a purely emotional, it is a purely vengeful act. It is getting revenge. There's no point in that in a society that has laws. Governor Quinn did the right thing. Now, Governor Quinn, do the environmental right thing. Veto the coal gasification bill. You can have a really good week, Mr. Governor, a really good week by, you know, prohibiting execution in Illinois and prohibiting coal gasification. I just think that would be an excellent.
Yes, we also have it up on Twitter. We posted the link for Illinois Sierra Club and on the Mike Novak show page on Facebook and on your page on Facebook, on your profile, Mr. Novak.
It is everywhere. And finally, the other thing you should know, and then I'm going to get to Martha, is on my homepage, MikeNovak.net, you're going to see that right after this show, I'm on another show. And that is the Craftsman Show. It is the Down and Dirty with Frank Fontana. I got invited to be on that. And it's, if you go to my homepage, you can see the link. And it's right at 11 o'clock. I'm running over there. Actually, we taped it on Friday. But
shh, don't tell the secrets.
The clown without his makeup. Mm. Okay. The Down and Dirty Show with Frank Fontana, sponsored by Craftsman. So I'm on that right after this show. Let's go to line one and bring in Martha Boyd. How you doing, Martha?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Always great, and always happy to talk to you.
Likewise.
I don't know if you heard how much you heard leading up to you. A lot going on at Family Farm this week.
It is a big event. Yeah.
And it's a huge deal. And mm-hmm. and you're one of the things you're involved in is policy, mm-hmm. and that is in particular City of Chicago policy. I know that you're with a group called Advocates for Urban Agriculture, and you can find the links to that on my website this week's show. You've been following and fighting to get policy changed in Chicago to make it easier for people to farm, basically, in the City of Chicago. Where does that stand right now?
It stands in sort of a limbo zone. The ordinance that was proposed in December is still being looked at by both on the city side and then by folks in the community, which includes grassroots community kinds of people and also entrepreneurs, new business types of people. So there are a lot of different agendas brought by the entire audience of folks that want to know what the policy is going to be that will be on the books for the city. So we're going to address that in two sessions at the Food Policy Summit, which is this Friday. AUA is facilitating them, and they start at 2:30, one at 2:30, the second at 4.
Mm-hmm. And if you go to my website, I've got the links to letters that you've sent to city departments. I didn't realize that and correct me if I'm wrong, zoning is actually under Chicago Department of Housing and Economic Development. Is that correct?
Yeah, what was Department of Planning and Zoning has been absorbed with others into the new Department of Housing and Economic Development, and the commissioner appointed is Andrew Mooney. So we sent a letter to Mr. Mooney in February along with a list of questions that we still felt needed more clarification. things that have been coming up all the way along and that people really want better answers to. And we received, right before our steering committee meeting this past Tuesday, we got a letter back with a list of written answers to those questions. What we had asked for was a forum where people could come and ask questions, hear the answers together, get things really clarified. And we're still hoping that that will happen.
It's a good point, because you can get so much more out in a forum. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier just to have people express their needs. And I've got those documents up online. It's kind of interesting if you're, and I've talked about policy, being a policy wonk a little earlier in the show, but if you're interested in how the back and forth works between groups and the city, this is kind of a bird's eye view of that.
It really is. Yeah, so it's a workshop, and it's a great learning experience. So people can find out a lot more through AUA. I'm working on updating some things on the AUA WordPress site, which you have a link to also. And if people can come out on Friday afternoon to the sessions of the Food Summit, we'll be talking about it in depth there as well.
Yeah, and I can't stress how important this is, because this is a chance for you to influence policy through the AUA, mm-hmm. because the AUA is talking to the city. And
to each other. And I think that's as much, you know, being in coalition with each other, being able to bring informed advising to the city, and also pressure if need be. So I think that it's very important for us to stay in communication with each other.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I know there's a lot of issues. You got to just go through those questions. What would you say are the top couple that you think are of concern in terms of growing food in Chicago?
Well, the biggest one really is how land is accessed and used, and that's what zoning is about. So that's a obviously big generic bundle,
mm-hmm.
but the question about who gets access to land and how hard is it to get access and who makes decisions, does the community get to weigh in on that? I mean, that's what this is all about, and there's a ton of vacant land. The prioritizing about how it's used typically is something speculative that's going to make somebody a bunch of money. And I think that this urban agriculture piece brings a lot of questions up. What's the economic value of food produced by people for themselves, as compared to people who are growing food for enterprise, which is also exciting and important.
Of course, as I said, all this information is up on my website, mikenovak.net. Read the documents. And if you can, show up Friday. And if you're really concerned about this, I mean, I'm trying to put up a community garden in my own yard, running into my own problems. They don't have to do with the city yet. Mm-hmm. But, it's hard enough when you're
It is hard enough, exactly. And the city could be more helpful rather than creating extra obstacles.
And, of course, we hope that with a new administration comes a new point of view. And it's, mm-hmm. And that's the other, that's sort of the X factor thrown into all of this. And check the Advocates for Urban Agriculture links you can get on the mailing list and keep up to date with all of it. It's fascinating stuff. Martha Boyd from Angelic Organics Learning Center, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll talk
Likewise.
Soon.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Bye. We just got a tweet from Vegan Diva blog. I finally got my hubby to listen to your show with me. He liked it, but first he asked, are you sure this is a gardening show? That's a good tweet to end on. Hey, I don't know. All I've got to say is...
Thanks, Mike Novak.
Podcast.
What? Podcast. Yeah, podcast is up later in the day. Go to MikeNovak.net.
And or search on iTunes, Mike Novak.
Whatever. Go green.
Or go home.